this has been a bloody week, both in Afghanistan and Pakistan, involving Taliban militants. Massacre of nearly 145 kids in Pakistan's school, suicide attack to Kabul Bank in Helmand, and two other attacks in Kabul. Taliban in both sides of the border have claimed responsibility for these attacks. Now, coalition forces are leaving Afghanistan by 2014. What are they leaving behind? Where do you see situation developing in Afghanistan, and what would the regional implication might be? And most importantly, are Central Asian neighbors of Afghanistan are ready for post-2014? During the next 30 to 40 minutes, we will be discussing the subject from all sides. To discuss the subject, I have a panel of distinguished guests from Ireland, Belfast. I have Ambassador Michael Semple, who was EU's Deputy Chief of Mission to Afghanistan, a well-known authority on Afghanistan and Pakistani subjects. He's currently a visiting professor at Queen's University in Belfast. From United States, I have Ambassador John Hurvest, who was the U.S. Ambassador to Uzbekistan, currently heading the Atlantic Council's Eurasia Center. Also from United States, Dr. Brian Williams, professor of Islamic history at MIT and author of many publications, including Afghanistan Declassified, A Guide to America's Longest War and Last Warlord, Life and Legend of General Dostum. In Prague, I have my colleague Bruce Panier, who is editor and author of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog called Kishlak Awazi. I am Mohammed Tahir, director of Turkmenistan Service at Radio Free Europe. Welcome, gentlemen, to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ambassador Michael Semple, let's start with you. In the light of what has happened in Pakistan and Afghanistan over the last two, 3 days, what kind of Afghanistan the NATO forces are leaving behind?
They're leaving behind an Afghanistan which is at war and will still be at war through 2015. But it's an Afghanistan which is not going to fall off the cliff, a government which is not about to collapse imminently. The government will still be in charge in Kabul and in the provinces, but will have to fight.
Dr. Brian, I remember some of our adventures while you were researching in Afghanistan. Taking your expertise on northern Afghanistan, tell us a bit about recent security developments in that part of the country. Where does it leading us to?
Well, we've seen very, unfortunate developments in the north. Usually when you think about the Taliban insurgency, you think about the south, Kandahar, Helmand, coast. But we've seen the Taliban have made inroads into Kunduz region. They've been moving closer and closer to the regional capital, and also in Faryab in the west.
Right. Ambassador Michael, let me come back to you. In northern Afghanistan used to be one of the most peaceful region when you were in Afghanistan. How things went into this point, into this direction?
Well, Taliban, don't forget that Abdul Rahman, the Iron Emir, planted Pashtun colonies in the north.
Right.
And it seems to be that there is a residue of support for the Taliban among these Pashtuns who were settled in northern Afghanistan back in the 19th century. During the 1997-1998 campaign, these Pashtuns sponsored and supported the Taliban as they made their conquest on the north. So once again, we see these internal colonies of Pashtuns supporting their co-ethnics, that is the Taliban, as they spread closer and closer to the regional capital of Kunduz and also in the west in Faryab.
Mohammed, can I come in on that?
Sure, Michael.
Just to add, obviously, Brian is correct that the Pashtuns, both in the northwest and the northeast, have been mobilized. But one of the developments we've seen over the past few years is that the non-Pashto-speaking Taliban of those areas, the Uzbeks, Tajiks, and Turkmen, also have mobilized, and they're now some of the Taliban fronts in the north, both looking over towards Kunduz and Tachar, and looking over towards Faryab, are actually run by commanders from the ethnic groups based in that area, not just the Pashtuns. I mean, the Faryab, which at times during the past year has been almost as violent as Helmand province. They've been sort of topping the violent statistics. The Taliban's shadow governor there is an Uzbek speaker.
Are they a threat to Central Asia?
Mike? Well, one of the consequences of the mobilization of the non-Pashto speakers there is that they are essentially the ethnic kin of the old IMU, the Islamic Movement of Uzbekistan, which has, over the past few years, been largely based in Waziristan. They have increasingly been trying to build on their links with the people up in northeastern and northwestern Afghanistan, and they, you know, they are again managing to establish their fighting forces in those areas. Not on a position to be out. They're not going to invade Central Asia, but certainly they will be an issue for concern.
Dr. Bain, you want to say something? Please jump in.
Yeah. I don't think it's quite as alarming as it was back in, say, 97 or 98 when the IMU was launching these raids as far as Kyrgyzstan and certainly into Uzbekistan. They've lost the free sanctuary in the north there. So I don't see them having, I agree with the previous speaker, I don't see them having the power to project their influence or project raids across the Amudarya into Central Asia.
I want to come to Ambassador John here to look at the situation from the Central Asian perspective. But first, Bruce, we have been working on stories involving these developments in Central Asia. What's your take on that? Are they posing or potentially posing a threat to Central Asia after the departure of coalition force from Afghanistan?
Well, I would agree that as a military force en masse, they don't represent much of a threat to Central Asia anytime in the near future. I would point out that besides the incursions by the Islamic Movement of Uzbekistan in 98 and 2000, there was a lot of other smaller skirmishes that involved people who were either part of the IMU or certainly were sympathetic to them. And this is the kind of thing that alarmed the Central Asian governments. You know, the militants in the mountains that they could kind of contain and keep up in the mountains were one thing. But when people started, hijacking buses and just randomly shooting up checkpoints, and it didn't happen a whole lot, but it did happen. And the response would just be overwhelming, where the Uzbek government or the Tajik forces or somebody would just start throwing military people in. And it unnerves a lot of people to see, you know, thousands of troops show up and fan out through the hills and fields and stuff looking for these people. It gives the locals the impression that the situation is getting more critical than they've been led to believe by state media. So that won't, you know, as far as an IMU incursion or something in the near future, probably not. But it doesn't take much to unnerve the Central Asian governments. And a bombing or, like I said, a checkpoint that shot up in the night or something like that is enough to make everyone in the region very nervous.
Mr. Hervest, how does the security developments in Afghanistan, particularly in the northern Afghanistan, is seen from Central Asia? To what extent are they ready or getting ready for post-2014?
There's no question that the governments in Central Asia are concerned that as ISAF moves out of Afghanistan, the Taliban may make a serious comeback within Afghanistan. In other words, we may eventually see the Taliban return to power in Kabul. And B, the Central Asian terrorists who've been fighting alongside the Taliban, whether in Afghanistan or Pakistan, might return to Central Asia. I agree with the other guests that this prospect is not an immediate one. You know, I don't expect it to happen in the next 1, 2, 3, even 10 or 12 months. But if, in fact, the newly elected government in Kabul is unable to hold the country, I certainly think we'll see the Central Asian terrorists return home. Alternatively, if, in fact, the new government in Kabul were able to fully assert its control throughout most of the country, which I think is unlikely, most of Afghanistan, you might see the terrorists forced out and head back home. I don't think, though, even if they headed back home, they don't represent an existential threat to the government of President Karimov in Uzbekistan. His security forces are very strong. They could, however, represent a tipping force in either Tajikistan or Kyrgyzstan. And they also represent, of course, a threat to individual Uzbeks where they can commit acts of terror.
What the governments of Uzbekistan or other neighboring countries in Central Asia are getting ready or are preparing to avoid that kind of threat that you are mentioning, Ambassador Herbert?
Well, I mean, there's no doubt that there are strong security forces in Uzbekistan and in Kazakhstan, and for that matter, in Turkmenistan, although you really haven't had a problem of Islamic terrorism in Turkmenistan. And they already pay a great deal of attention to the problem of terrorism, both individually and through the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, and also to a certain extent in consultation with the United States and Western powers. And they watch very carefully what's happening to their south, and they devote resources to preventing any sort of terrorist incident from taking place. But again, if in fact things change sharply in Afghanistan, and we see a movement north, you know, by the AMU, well, conceivably, they will have the capacity, the Central Asian terrorists, to create at least a little bit of mayhem. And we can expect, in that case, an overreaction on the part of Central Asian security forces, overreaction in, you know, substantial mobilization of counter-terrorist forces, and perhaps also an overreaction involving human rights abuses, which is unfortunate and wrong.
Ambassador Hurvest, you know, we do see some kind of reaction or preparation, at least from one Central Asian country, that is Turkmenistan, and there were some cross-border incidents from the militants which are based in Afghanistan who crossed the Turkmen side and killed six soldiers during this year. And now, as a result of that, obviously, Turkmenistan is reportedly digging ditches in Afghan-Turkmen border and fencing some areas there. I mean, Bruce, we have been working together on similar subjects in the past. Can you talk about it a little bit and describe what kind of situation you see from Turkmenistan's perspective in terms of getting ready for post-2014?
Ambassador, please.
Go ahead, please. I'll go after you.
Okay, I was just going to say that, you know, Tajikistan and Uzbekistan, and you mentioned the Uzbek security forces, I mean, they've been getting ready for this for a long time. In fact, you could even go back to when the Taliban first became their neighbors. They've been doing everything they can to reinforce their borders. You know, the Turkmen are just very far behind on this. You know, the northern areas of Afghanistan that bordered them were relatively quiet for most of the last 13 years, and it's only really the last couple of years that they've had noticeable problems over there. And the Turkmen, of course, in the past were always able to rely on the fact that they would just cut a deal with whoever was the neighbors. It was, you know, before the Taliban, the Rabbani government, and then after when the Taliban showed up, they had a deal with them. So they really don't seem to have taken many measures. And all of a sudden now there's this rush to get everything set up. You know, we saw earlier in the year that they had this strange policy where they were kind of helping the villagers on the Afghan side of the border and promising some things. And in the meantime, they seemed to be, or there were reports that they were speaking with various groups in Afghanistan through the council in Mazar-e-Sharif. And then all of a sudden, a couple months ago, they just seemed to figure that the policy of being friends with the villagers on the other side of the border was not the correct policy for some reason. And they decided that they were going to build defensive walls around their border, which is a trick in itself. This is a very long border, and there's hardly anyone in some of these places. I mean, it's desert. So I think they're a little bit late. And, you know, we had an article, one of our first ones, that said it was the Achilles heel, Turkmenistan, the Achilles heel of Central Asian security. And I think that's where they're at right now, and it's really showing.
And Mr. Harris, please, go on.
Well, there's another point I think worth mentioning here. Yeah. This is what I had in mind when I made my comment earlier. The problem of Central Asian terrorism has largely been a problem in Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, though more among the Uzbek population of Kyrgyzstan, and Tajikistan. That's where you've had internal developments which have spawned at least a small terrorist movement. That has not really been an internal problem in Turkmenistan. But Uzbekistan, again, it has, relatively speaking, competent security forces, and they've addressed this going all the way back to the first days, to the ascendancy of the Taliban in Afghanistan in the early to mid-90s. Turkmenistan has not had to worry about this as an internal problem in the past. And that's one of the reasons why perhaps they have not taken steps along their border, which are essential now that they have hyperactive and somewhat aggressive Taliban alongside their border.
Ambassador Michael and Dr. Brian, both of your beliefs are like developments in northern Afghanistan is concerning, but it is not an immediate threat to Central Asia. This was my understanding from your points. Ambassador Michael, let's go with you. Do you see Central Asian governments playing a larger role in northern Afghanistan that might help to avoid, even if there is any potential threat in the future?
Well, it's interesting that we've been talking, first of all, about the security developments right. with the changes in Afghanistan in 2014. But there may be very interesting changes in politics and government. The Afghanistan currently runs on a fairly centralized government system where, despite experiments by Turkmenistan sort of dealing with some of the villagers along the border, most of the dealings are state to state, from capital to Kabul. But Afghanistan has been through different phases. We had a phase during the 90s where this is the de facto powers, where the people sitting in Shibrghan and Mazar-e-Sharif rather than in Kabul. And the question is, what's going to happen in the year or two to come? Right. For the moment, the new president who's taken over, the new government, it's still going to go through a phase of centralization, sort of business as usual, and perhaps even more assertive than previously, more strategic than previously. They will insist that the Central Asian states deal with Kabul, not with the provincial centers. But the coalition government is also committed to go through some kind of constitutional review process, which might lead to decentralization. And certainly, some of the people in northern Afghanistan are hopeful that again there will be a little bit more power in Shibrghan and Mazar, that some of those powers will be devolved from the capital up to the northern provincial centres, and that they will indeed be able to have some relations with the Central Asian republics. I think this is an issue exactly who should Tashkent deal with? Where in Afghanistan should they deal with? This is an issue that the Afghans are going to be arguing about for the next 2 years.
Right, so you are against the idea of the Central Asian governments dealing with an ethnic groups directly in northern Afghanistan. That was the case like in the past, in 90s, when there was a war going on in Afghanistan during the Taliban and before the Taliban, that Uzbekistan had its own man in northern Afghanistan, Dostum, and then Tajiks had their own man in Afghanistan. So that situation, you say, is not going to be useful going forward.
Yes, if Tashkent were to try and develop direct relations with their own man, whether it be Mohammad Atta in Mazar or one of the other figures, to try and have direct relations cutting out the central government in Kabul, they would very soon get into trouble. They would find that this would be extremely controversial in Afghanistan and would precipitate a lot of strong political reaction. However, this is a situation which is under review. I think that very few people in Afghanistan want to see a return to the warlord era of the 1990s. They are looking for a negotiated and agreed process whereby they reorganize the allocation of powers between the provinces and the center. But it's something which is highly controversial inside Afghan politics. There will be very difficult discussions in Afghanistan before they come with a settlement. And I think the best advice for the Central Asian states is to stay out of that debate and wait for the Afghans to come up with a solution, and then ensure that they adjust their diplomatic relations and aid to the formula that the Afghans have adopted.
Ambassador Michael, your point is well taken, but my little concern is, the authority of central government in Afghanistan is so weak in that part of the country that still warlords or the chieftains or, the regional powers are the people who rule the village or the district there. So, I'm just wondering how having a discussion with central government in Afghanistan is going to influence the situation there.
Well, you know, it's the way that states operate in times of war. It's interesting that when, you know, in the sort of like the darkest days of the conflict of Afghanistan in the 1990s, when sort of the Rabbani government sort of almost, you know, was controlling very little territory, one thing they did control was the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in central Kabul, and they sort of tried to direct relations through that. Your point is well taken, that the reality of Afghanistan is that power is, you know, real power, social power is highly decentralized, and there are many village republics. But when it comes to interstate relations, because the government in Kabul at the moment is committed to maintaining a centralized structure, and certainly with a monopoly on international relations to be conducted, to be held by Kabul, that they will insist that Tashkent deal through Kabul, not through Mazar-e-Sharif, until there is some other formula in process. If anybody tries to work their way around that, to shortcut that, they will find a very strong reaction from the Afghans.
Right. Dr. Brian, what is your take on what role the Central Asian governments can play to avoid a potential threat from northern Afghanistan?
Well, you know, I think a lot of this discussion is based on a sort of worst-case scenario. You know, don't forget that the Afghan army still has, or Afghan military forces, still have 344,000 troops. And we look at history, the Najibullah regime lasted for years after the withdrawal of the Soviet support forces, the 40th limited contingent. So I think we shouldn't write off the Ghani government yet. I think that they're very strong, and the Taliban have about 30,000 force. And I suspect that the Ghani government will have a lot more influence and strength in the north than we suggest right now.
Right. Bruce, you are shaking your hand. If you like, just jump in to continue the discussion.
I understand the numbers, and I'm... You know, I'm sure that the Afghan government's going to make its most sincere effort to try to reclaim the part of the north. And we know even from our reports that they have sent extra units up there to try to drive out the Taliban and have driven them out. Unfortunately, they seem to depart, and then the Taliban reoccupy the area. My concern is just more that, we've mentioned some of the provinces, Faryab and Kunduz, but, I mean, it's also Badakhshan and Baghdiz, and there's almost every province, northern province that borders Central Asia is having serious security problems at the moment. How do you distribute your forces to, and what's the priority, and we know, of course, the priorities for the Afghan government are going to be Kabul and Kandahar, without a doubt. And then from there, we see how they allot troops. So it certainly in the next couple of years, it'll be interesting to watch and see how they try to retain hold of the north and reclaim areas that we know have fallen to the Taliban in the north. We were talking Jozjon province, and there just seems like there's dozens of villages that are effectively under control of the Taliban now, and we've heard Faryab is in a similar situation. I know Badakhshan has a similar problem. Kunduz has a similar problem. So it's really a question of where the Afghan government is going to place the priority on attacking the Taliban. And I would suggest that, certainly the big cities in the country, which are in the east and the south, are probably the ones that are going to get the most attention early on.
Right. It's almost the time that I promised to end the discussion. But still, there are lots of questions remain to be answered. And this security situation, the way it is in Afghanistan, does not help us to answer those questions at the moment. But just to end the discussion, can I start with Ambassador Herbst, with you? What the end game looks like from your point of view at this stage?
I'm not certain it's an endgame type situation. I think what we see is the Central Asian governments want to prevent a problem from returning. And we will find out if the problem returns as we watch events in Afghanistan and Pakistan over the next year. If the government in Kabul is able to assert its authority throughout most of the country, particularly in the border areas, along the border with Tajikistan and Uzbekistan and Turkmenistan, maybe the Central Asian fighters will not be able to move into Central Asia, or alternatively, maybe they'll be kicked out and move back that way. The governments in Central Asia will be watching this carefully, and their security forces are already following it, and they'll want to make sure that they either capture these people as they come back, or take action, deal with them physically as they try and return, or keep them out. And if they make it back, then their end game will be trying to contain and destroy any presence they have within the country. But it's more a watch and be ready to react situation than a campaign plan to be put into action.
Right. Ambassador Michael?
I believe that we shall see increasingly a regional conflict, one in which developments in the Middle East, Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Central Asia are all linked, in which we see militants moving between those three areas, Central Asia, South Asia, and the Middle East, and the security developments in one sector having implications directly for all the other parts of the peace. It's a regional conflict.
Right. Dr. Ryan?
Yeah, I don't see the Taliban, taking any regional centers like Kunduz City or Mazar Sharif or Shibagan. What I see them doing is coming out of the woodwork and moving closer and closer to the regional capitals, because they don't have to face American air power anymore, which has always held them back. I don't see them having the capacity to take large towns like Mazar Sharif. So I think, in this sense, northern Afghanistan, the old Turkestan, as it was called, will still sort of act as a shield protecting Central Asia. I don't see the Taliban or the IMU projecting the power across the Amudarya as they did circa 2000.
Right. Bruce Panier, final words.
I would say that the Taliban would do everything to consolidate their hold over Afghanistan first and foremost as they try to move forward. But we'll see what kind of progress they make. If they think that the Central Asian governments are giving some kind of a significant aid to the Afghan government, they might let loose small groups of terrorists, because the Central Asian governments have always been much more worried about their internal problems, naturally. And they would shift their focus immediately away from the border and divert it to an internal crackdown, if that is, assuming that the Taliban were making progress and were able to pull something like that off.
Great. Ambassador John Hurwitz, Ambassador Michael Semple, Dr. Ryan Williams, Bruce Panier, thank you very much for an interesting and intriguing discussion today. It was a pleasure to have you in the show. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.